But it seems to me the Washington Monument is a symbol of America's power. We look at that monument and we say, this is one nation under God. Now there's a crack in it. There's a crack in it and it's closed up. Is that a sign from the Lord? Is this a symbolic? You know, ladies and gentlemen, I don't want to get weird on this, so please take it for what it's worth. You judge.
I'll judge. He's cracked, all right.
Well, hello, everybody. Thank you for hanging out. Thank you for waiting for us to get our shit together, for our streaming service to get its shit together.
Well, there was a little problem with the server. The server was turned off. We couldn't get into the server through the normal means, but we did manage to get into it through the weird way that we know of.
Thanks for sticking around, and thank you to you from the land of hurricanes and earthquakes.
What in the world is going on? You've had an earthquake now, and we know that the Washington Monument is cracked. Now, what about that claim that the Washington Monument's crack has healed itself and it's a miracle from God? Now, what in the world is he talking about, if it happened?
Yeah. Well, after all, you know, we've got that magical power of life and death. You know, we sprinkle that queer pixie dust on everything. And I mean, you listen to somebody like Pat Robertson and you say, is the guy like, I mean, is he really on this planet, or is he so wrapped up in his own brand of Christianity that, you know, I mean, there reaches a point where, you know, you start to say, I mean, does this guy have any affiliation with reality whatsoever? Yeah. God hates poor people. Remember that, boys and girls.
That's right. It's in the Bible.
Yeah. You know, who would Jesus cut off? You know, I mean, because after all, we all know that the Bible tells us that Jesus, you know, was really a big fan of the rich folks, and, you know, he didn't give a shit about the poor. You know, I mean, that's what they teach in that Bible, right? I mean, I'm Jewish, so, you know, well, some of you Christian folks will have to correct me here. You know, but it seems like, you know, if you follow Pat Robertson, you follow Rick Perry, you follow these Christians, these loyal, observant Christians, it's like, it seems like, you know, Jesus must have been, you know, totally in bed with the bankers, or the money changers, as they used to call them in those days. And he hated the poor people, right? You know, I mean, seems like that's exactly what, you know, the lessons, or at least the lessons that these people are taking from their Bible.
Now, there's one thing.
I mean, talk about hypocrisy. My God.
One thing about it. Social programs like Medicare, Social Security, Medicaid were not in the Bible. And so they're unbiblical, and they're also not in the Constitution, per se.
Yeah, but, you know, caring for the poor was.
I don't know. Jesus would have taken the money from those people in the temple and put it in his pocket. I think so.
Okay, well, I don't know enough about Christian theology to know which temple you're referring to. Thank you to you guys for sticking around and putting up with this nonsense. Of course, it is
show.
The Rebecca Juro Show, and that would be me. And, of course, the ever amazing and ever diligent Mike Scott getting us back on the air. That would be him.
Fat chance.
Well, we're on the air, right? You did it.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're on the air. We are here. I expect that very soon, perhaps maybe towards the top of the hour, we're going to have a special surprise phone call from somebody who I'm sure is listening right now. And so around the top of the hour, we're going to have that for you. Interesting, Mike, because a lot of stuff going on. One of the things that I thought was just unbelievable, we didn't get to this last week. I wanted to talk about this because this just shows you that, you know, as we gain more acceptance as trans folks and allies, we gain more acceptance in the mainstream, you know, the assholes really start to come out of the woodwork. And here is a true example of gold-plated assholery in the media. Mike, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Run that baby for us.
When did everybody get fucking lumped in with the gays? You know what I mean? What percentage is transgendered? You know what I mean? Like, let's just say I was a politician and I was like, hey, transgendered folks, I don't need your vote. I don't think I could get elected. But they make up 30% of the population. Sure, I went to school with a bunch of transgendered guys, and now I work with a bunch of them. Like, what the fuck? When did we start giving a shit about these people?
Yeah, I don't know. And then I don't know one.
We got to work it out with the, you know, and now there's all these variations where it's like, I'm a pre-op transgendered, trans-neutral, trans-fat. Shut the fuck up.
Lovely. This is, you know... Adam Carolla, by the way, who, you know, Mr. Big Shot used to be host of the Man Show, I think. Now he's got a podcast. That's what he's got now. He's got no real job. Okay, he's got a podcast. And trust me, I know whereof I speak there. I know a little bit about what that's about. Okay, so here's this Big Shot has been jerk off, spouting off like he knows what the fuck he's talking about. It just gets annoying after a while to hear these assholes. And of course, then he comes out and he apologizes. He said, I'm sorry my comments were hurtful. I'm a comedian, not a politician. Wrong. At least you're right about the second, but you're certainly wrong about the first. Comedian? That's supposed to be funny? You know, it's like, why don't you go do some blackface next? Maybe you'll really get some yucks. I mean, could this guy really be this unbelievably stupid and ignorant? Well, yeah, I guess he can. Because this whole thing started off where they started discussing the recent Bert and Ernie, they're supposed to get gay married. And this is another one. This is even more idiotic. This, if it's possible for something to be even more idiotic than Adam Carolla, this is it. Bert and Ernie, gay married. I mean, they're made of felt, people. Okay, these are fucking puppets. They're not gay. They're not straight. They're not anything. They're puppets. They go on a shelf and get folded up at the end of the show. People should grow the fuck up. I mean, this is on the level of Pat Robertson and his Teletubbies crap. I mean, really, you know, I mean, people are just getting unbelievably stupid about these things, you know, and Glad, you know, Glad got involved with this Adam Carolla thing. Let's see. Senior director of programs, Hernan Graddick, said, given his history of anti-gay and racist comments, networks and advertisers should know what their money is supporting if they choose to hire Adam Carolla. The gross intolerance that he tries to pass off as comedy should not have a place on our airwaves. And I tend to agree with that. Although, you know, as bad as he is, there are people who put these jerks on the air, okay, tonight, as a matter of fact, tonight, as we are broadcasting, not quite yet, but in a little while we're on the air, Keith Olbermann tonight is going to have Michael Musto on, okay? Michael Musto, as some of you will remember, is the guy who made disgusting transphobic jokes about Carrie Prejean a while back, saying that she was disparaging her by saying that she was really a secret transsexual. She was the beauty queen who said that she was against gay marriage. Told Perez Hilton, you tell probably the most famous gay guy in the country that you're anti-gay marriage, and he's one of your judges. It's like, how big of a moron do you have to be? I mean, really, you know, and so, you know, and that's who he's having on as a guest tonight. So that doesn't impress me too much. So part of the problem with these jerk offs like Adam Carolla and Michael Musto is that people keep putting them on the air. They keep putting microphones and cameras in front of their faces for them to spew their bigotry and ignorance. That's part of the problem. You know, and that's where I start to get off the boat, okay? And that leads me into something else that I want to kind of get into just a little bit. There was, just this week, there was a panel on Headline News, HLN, which is a CNN channel, on the Joy Behar Show. And Joy Behar, some of you may know, she's on The View, and she has her own show on HLN. And Don Lemon, newly out gay CNN host Don Lemon, was filling in for her. And they did a trans panel, and it featured Chaz Bono and three trans women. It was supposed to be Trans in Hollywood. And Lemon, man, you know, I mean, I realized on the one hand that the guy's trying to make an effort to cover these issues, and I can appreciate that on that basis. But it's like, dude, you have got to do your homework on this stuff. I mean, he comes out and he starts asking these questions that are just like idiocy. I mean, I'm sorry, you know, and I don't, I'm not comfortable bashing this guy because he's making an effort, and I want to acknowledge and appreciate that he is making an effort, because frankly it's a lot more than other channels like so-called progressive MSNBC would ever do. So, you know, I want to acknowledge that the guy is making an effort. But, you know, you got to do your homework. Okay, what does he start doing? He starts asking Chaz Bono about shaving. It's like, grow the fuck up, dude. It's not what it's about. It's like, you know what it's like? It's like every trans documentary ever made, where what do they show? If it's a woman, they show her putting on lipstick. If it's a guy, they show him shaving. It's like, get real. It's like, how about some real questions? How about throw in the question? Okay, two of the people on that panel, two of the women on that panel, one was homeless and living in a shelter. The other one had been living in a shelter. Why not ask about that? Why not ask about the conditions and the legal situation that leads to people being homeless and having to use shelters as their home? How about that? How about acting like a real journalist, Don Lemon, and asking important questions about the politics and the political situation and the laws that govern us, so that that lead to these situations, instead of trying to do a transgender 101? I mean, you know what? We don't need to hear. I mean, if you want to hear about how a woman transitions into a man, you know what? Chaz has a book out. There are plenty of other places where you can get that information. You know, if you really want to understand trans people, you can't eliminate the political context. And I'll tell you, I actually sent Don Lemon a message, because as some of you know, I discussed this with Monica Roberts last week when we had her on the show. You know, Don Lemon and I had an exchange about Ashley Love and about this whole NAACP thing. And I sent her a link. Excuse me. I sent him a link to Monica Roberts' article at TransGrio about the situation. And he seemed like, you know, yeah, I get it. Thank you for telling me. And it seemed to me, at least at the time, that, you know, he had what I call an oh shit moment. Like, oh, geez, I really fucked that up, didn't I? You know, one of those situations. Hey, everybody has them. Everybody's entitled. The question is not, do you have a situation like that? The question is what do you do once you realize you have one? You know, and so I can forgive mistakes. I mean, every journalist, every person out there is going to screw up now and then. I'm certainly no exception. So I certainly don't have the right to berate somebody for making a mistake, as long as it's an honest mistake. But, you know, then you come out and you go and you do this interview with Chaz Bono and with these ladies. And frankly, I think he could have done a lot better research, because he's doing, you know, transgender 101. And he's like, you know, acting like, well, I'm a gay guy, so I get this. It's like, no, you don't. You don't get it. Just because you happen to be gay, just because you happen to be out, you know, there is certain aspects of the transgender experience that do correlate with being gay. Absolutely, there are. The coming out process, for example, a lot of corollary there. You know, finding it within yourself to be out and open about who you are and those kind of things. Sure, absolutely, there's plenty there that where the lines do cross, where the paths merge. But there's also a lot that separates. I mean, it is a similar path in some ways, but it is not the same path. And to say that, well, I'm gay, so I get it, proves that you don't get it. Because if you did get it, if you really understood it, there's no way you would ever credibly try to say something like that. And that's the problem. That's the problem with people like Don Lemon. It's the problem with people who you know, try to make it like, well, I get what it is to be transgender because I'm gay or because I know somebody who's gay or because... It's just annoying. And again, my guess is, and I actually said this on a blog earlier. Mike is sending me a little secret message here. You know what, Mike? Why don't you run that Don Lemon clip?
How are things between you and Cher?
Fine.
Yeah. The reason I ask, because I've watched this you a lot throughout the last couple years as you have been doing the documentary and making this transition and your book and all of that, and I've been paying close attention to you, and I notice that Cher is never at a loss for words. She hasn't been that, we've seen her, but she really hasn't been that outspoken about this. Why is that?
I have no idea. That's something you have to ask her.
I mean, you are her, was her daughter, now her son. I mean, you wouldn't know why she would not speak so much about it. Usually Cher comes out and talks. I mean, she calls into C-SPAN, for God's sakes. I would just think that she would be more vocal on this issue.
Again, I don't know what's in the woman's brain. You'd have to really ask her.
Yeah. Do you guys still talk, though?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. But she's comfortable with all of this.
I think it's a process that takes, you know, parents a long time to get comfortable with.
You know, I have two issues with this particular clip. First of all, you know, for somebody who's looking to be a transgender media figure, I really wish that Chaz Bono would do a better job of. This guy, and don't get me wrong, I have not read his book. I'm sure he's a good writer. But man, this guy on TV or the radio could put your ass to sleep in about 3 seconds. You're asking questions. And granted, okay, I bet he was a little annoyed with Don Lemon. I know I was. Okay, so, you know, I might be able to forgive him on that score. But, you know, I mean, when the guy asks you a question, you're answering like a sentence or two. You know, I mean, you know, I felt like I'm sitting there watching this thing, and I'm like, Chaz, for God's sakes, it's like he's throwing you a softball. Get it out of the park. Give him the information. Do some education here. But he didn't. No, yes, yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, it's like, dude, it's like, you know, you have a media platform that some of us would kill for. Fucking use it. For God's sakes, man, use it. And that's what kills me about Chaz Bono. Is, like I said, I'm sure he's a great writer. I don't know. I've never read anything he's written, so I can't really say that. But, you know, I mean, when somebody hands you the one thing that he said through this whole panel thing that I thought was really good was when he called Lemon out and he said, you know, why are we doing transgender 101 here? Which is exactly right. You know, it's like people understand what the basic concept of transgender is about. Okay, just because you don't get it, Don Lemon, doesn't mean the rest of the world hasn't joined, you know, isn't in the 21st century, even if you're still living, you know, 30 years ago in terms of your understanding of this issue. The rest of us, you know, would like to know more. What I would have done, and this is just me, granted, I mean, you know, chances are you're not going to see me on CNN, unfortunately, as much as I would love a shot at a panel like that. You know, what I would have done was I would have said, well, here's the real issue. The real issue is that we live in a country where in 29 states you can be fired for being gay. And in 35 states for being transgender. And where people who... You know, people like Harmony Santana, who was on this panel, you know, they live in shelters. Why? Because, you know, we still they live in a state, unfortunately, even though New York City has a law, most of New York State, it's still legal to fire somebody or throw them out of their home just for being transgender. You know, and to me, That would have been the responsible question, the right question to ask. It's like, not, you know, what does it feel like to shave? Well, the real question, the question that we need people like Don Lemon to be asking when, on panels like this, is what is life as a transgender person in this country like? That's the question. Not talk about surgery, not talk about chest hair and facial hair, not, you know, I mean, the problem is, you know, you would think that a journalist of who has risen to the level of someone like a Don Lemon would be a better journalist when it comes to this. I mean, you know, you do your homework before you step on the air. I mean, I'll tell you, I am a transgender person. I immerse myself in this content all the time. And when I prepare for this show, I prepare. I spend a couple of hours before I turn on a microphone figuring out what I'm going to say. Now, there are a lot of times, like right now, when I'm off the cuff, I'm talking to you, here's what's pissing me off today. And yeah, this is kind of off the cuff kind of information. I'm just talking, okay? But I do my reading. I do my homework. I make sure I know what this week's stories are. And I go and I find people like Monica Roberts and all these other folks who we have on the show. You know, I mean, that all takes time. That's all prep work. And I come on, I do my 2 hours, or, well, who knows how long we're going to go tonight. No promises. We'll see how long we go. I don't know. We may go a little bit longer, obviously, a little later than 9 o'clock, since we got started 45 minutes late tonight. Once again, I do apologize. Shit happens. All right. But in any case, I would like to see a little bit more effort on the part of the media to get this, to do a better job. You know, I thought it was so great that Jennifer Finney Boylan is having a series of op-eds in the New York Times. The New York Times. Yeah. I mean, and good stuff. Good stuff. Published in the New York Times. That's awesome. So, you know, I mean, at least some people get it. Okay, why don't we take a quick break, and then our special super secret call-in guest will be joining us right after that.
Super secret. And here's Anthony and the Johnsons.
Oh, this okay, is nice. See you in a couple.
Past no other faces in the river. Hear me, I'm whispering.
It's the Becky Giro Show from Trans FM and Q1.FM. And Becky's super secret guest, I will reveal the name. She's activist Dion Stallworth. Coming up with Becky in just a minute.
I'm a new soul. I came to this strange world hoping I could learn a bit about how to give and take. But since I came here, felt the joy and love feel, finding myself making every possible mistake.
Hey, everybody, we are back, and we have, as I said, Mike just blew the secret. It's okay. We have with us right now Dion Stallworth, who is an activist, African-American trans lady, who has been a figurehead in our community for many years. And hi, Dion. How you doing? It's great to have you on the show.
Yeah, I'm hanging in there. You have to toss the I in there because I've confirmed a few years ago that I got here with both sets of equipment and my father chose.
Really? Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that's news to me. That didn't pop up in the research that I did.
Imagine how I felt.
Well, thanks for calling in. I'm glad to hear it. Now, you know, I want to ask you. I know you were listening a little earlier. I was talking about the Don Lemon thing. I don't know. Did you see the panel this week? The transgender panel on HLN. And if so, what'd you think about it?
I read the Janet Mock piece. There was a posting of the footage. I saw some of it. I heard what you played. To wit, I replied in when you said you want to be fair to this guy. He's opening up the issues. I have to remind you that it was Joy Behar's show. I don't think Don Lemon really. I don't think he gets it. I don't think that if. I don't think that he would that he actually gets it to the point where he would actually you saw the type of questions that he asked, so he has no clue. And I have a slight bone to pick with you, Becky.
Okay.
About Ashley. I think that given her youth and everything else aside, I think that she did okay. Now I don't know what went on behind the scenes, but I know what has been released. The video piece that she was in, I think she did rather well until she started bringing the idea that he had, on one hand, behind the scenes indicated that he was supportive, and in a public forum that he indicated he was supportive, and now he wasn't. I don't think that I think that you give people like that, you let them hang themselves. You don't have to hang them out to dry.
I understand what you're saying. In my own defense, what I would argue is that my biggest problem with Ashley Love is not her intent and it's not her effort. It's two things. Number one is her credibility. I would personally have much rather have seen someone like Monica Roberts or Marissa Richmond, somebody with a little history, somebody with a little, I'm going to say it, credibility. To speak to those issues. And I also have a large problem with Ashley because of her separatist attitude. And, men in dresses and things like that, women with penises, this kind of thing. I have a big problem with.
Well, that's only because I think that Ashley's separatist attitudes are only reflective of what we see in queer space. Okay. Don't get me wrong. Mike and I were talking about this a little bit, before I came on, the whole idea about us. And I made mention of this on a Facebook post early today. I mean, Perry made some comments, equating alcoholism and gayness. Now, people are worried about whether this guy equates gayness with alcoholism, and people who are supposed to be leading the queer movement, the gay movement, have not even acknowledged the very human beings that are transgender and supposed to be, and we wound up more times than not grouped in right along with them. But they don't acknowledge our humanness. And when issues about us come out in the press and what have you, we are not referred to as human. The first thing that they do is strip us of our humanity. We are its. We are things. Almost like pets. And it really gets me. I mean, I had when DADT passed, I had the most interesting situation since I served in uniform in my former life, or this one, depending on how you look at it. I found out that DADT was not gender variant inclusive, and I felt personally, as a veteran, I felt insulted. And so I staged my one-woman protest and said that, you know, celebrate your hollow victory, people, because it doesn't matter what uniform you serve under, what flag you serve under, or who you get married to or who you sleep with, if you're dead. And I still stand by that. But the fact of the matter is that you've seen this throughout history. We just recently to the 19th Amendment, but what is not widely known is that the black suffragettes who did most of the legwork and the footwork with regard to the passage of the 19th Amendment were put under the bus just to get it passed. Now, if we are going to amount to anything as trans and gender variant people and as queer people in the 21st century, we have to look back before we can move forward. The first thing we need to do is acknowledge that the differences that we have are minor, considering how much we all have in common. It's always been about a human rights issue. Blacks in the 60s, we did not get the Civil Rights Act passed. We did not get the Voting Rights Act passed, not by our lonesome. If you look at some of that old footage, you see white people, you see Asian people, you see Jewish people, you see Native American people, you see every kind of people, including black people down there.
Right, but you also have to remember that at that time, and I think this is very analogous to what we're dealing with now, as far as I know, and please correct me if I'm wrong here, but I don't believe there were any, any African American people in our Congress. You know, certainly had never served in most political offices at that time. You know, it just wasn't, just like we see today, where you can count on the fingers of one hand the number of trans people who are in these offices.
It was just some. It was by no means the level at which it is today. However, we have to start someplace. And the first place that I think that we should start is recognizing that there is a human component here, that these words of law not only are words, but they actually have real effects on real human beings.
Agreed. Now, let me ask you a question. Do you think the issue is our media, guys like Don Lemon and people like that? Or is it our politics? Is it the politicians who have been running scared, who are holding hearings on repealing the Defense of Marriage Act in the middle of a heated budget battle, but somehow can't find the time to, deal with our jobs, with the Employment Non-Discrimination Act?
It's both, actually. And some of that, all of us have to accept part of that blame. We as transvariant, however you want to put us, to name us or to define us. And that is the key point. If you read the interview that I had with Gennaro Urso a couple of years ago, Monica rewrote it and, ran the copy in her Transgreo column. The problem that I see in this movement, and I've been a part of it for close to 30 years, is that we don't have a definition for ourselves. So what happens is that everybody and their grandmother decides on who is trans and who is not. Today, what we have a group of people who you mentioned about Philadelphia, and since I happen to live here, I know a little bit about it. What we have today in the city is that we have people who think of trans people as an afterthought in terms of queer space. And in terms of gathering information about us, they have to get money to get to do the research on the information about us. But they don't ask us at the beginning. No, that would be too easy. What they do is they gather the same people at the tables all the time. They determine who is trans enough, who's gay enough, who's queer enough to sit at these tables and make the definitions, and then we follow suit. If we don't define who we are, then everyone else will, and they will define the cause of the argument. They will also define how we are presented to the media, plain and simple.
I agree with you there. And in fact, one of the few good comments that Don Lemon made during that trans panel was that there's an ongoing debate within our own community as to who is what, who's a transsexual, who's transgender, who's a crossdresser, who's this, where the lines are. And I think part of the problem is too many of us, I believe, are looking for that bright line. And saying, you are either this or that. It is either black or white. When the reality is most of us inhabit shades of gray. And I think trying to put everybody in neat little boxes never works. And we, of course, all people, as trans folks, should know better.
Nature has a different plan for that. I think, Kinsey, when he was doing his landmark studies back in the 40s and 50s, he discovered that sexuality is on a continuum. Now, everybody who is in the trans-inclusive era, who has a little bit of mileage on them, knows about Benjamin's great study, which was called the transsexual phenomenon back in '60. In his work, he alluded to the point that that gender is also on a continuum. Now, the preponderance of scientific study and evidentiary studies as of late have begun to confirm this. And what happens is that when it comes to being able to make comfort with oneself, one has to be able to know where one fits. So it took us a while to get comfortable with the idea of sexuality on a continuum. It might take us a while to get acclimated to gender on a continuum. But, you know, when the homosexuals were cured in 1972, they, you know, millions of people, you know, kind of went under celebrated, but, you know, they were cured from mental illness in 72. You remember that, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, yeah, so, absolutely. At least, in terms of what the APA says, anyway.
Yeah, so you know we're still mentally ill. So at least according to the APA.
Well, don't forget.
So maybe when we get cured as well, you know, people will begin to take our issues seriously on one level.
Well, don't forget that we are still banned from military service on the basis of the fact that we are transgender makes us, by the military definition, mentally insane. It makes us insane simply by the fact that we are transgender.
That's because of the AP, the DSM and what it says about us. And yeah. nobody seems to have problems with that. And each of us, as since we don't have a quote unquote, we have a bunch of people who are designated as leaders and what have you, but we don't have a quote unquote leader. We don't have a trans Dr. Martin King. We don't have a trans Bella Abzug. We don't have any of that. We have a lot of people who come from their own experience, and I'm not downing anybody. I've known a few people and I've come from that myself. But you cannot let this is bigger than black, this is bigger than white, this is bigger than religion, this is bigger than politics. It's always been about the human factor. And I think that most of us in our activism, in our politics and everything else, we seem to leave that behind. And that's what's killing us.
You know, I you mentioned something that really strikes home for me personally, and I take a lot of flack of this from the community, as I know you'll understand, because one of the things that I bet a lot of people don't know about you is that you were one of the founding members of GenderPAC, which, of course, the executive director, Ricky Wilchins, who I cite as the person who got me involved and who got me to care. I went to Ricky speak in New York. I guess this was 1997 or 1998. And I saw her speak at the New York Gay and Lesbian Center. And I was like absolutely flabbergasted because I understood, you know, I had no idea any of this stuff was going around. I had no idea that there was a political political aspect to transgender. Up until that point, I was just, you know, I just want to be a girl. That's all I knew. I didn't understand that there was a whole political dimension to being transgender. And at that point,
being human is political statement. I mean, as far as gender being a political issue, like I said, Bella Abzug, Susan B. Anthony, Audre Lorde, what was her name?
But my point is that at that time, Ricky was starting to emerge as kind of a leader and as a figurehead in a lot of ways. And in a lot of ways, the community turned on her. Rightly or wrongly, we can debate until the cows come home. But the community rejected her essentially as a leader. And I was wondering, is there a danger? Is that one of the reasons why we don't have leaders presenting themselves? Because when we do have somebody like that who appears, we go after them and we cut them down.
Oh, you know? God, this is great.
I'm wondering if you agree with that, because it seems like when we have somebody like that who rises to the top, or at least towards the top.
You.
You know what I'm saying?
I've got a quote for you.
I'm sorry?
I've got a quote for you. Got a quote for you. Okay. You ever watch the movie called Watchmen?
Oh, yeah. One of my favorites.
Okay. Then this should be familiar to you. Is that what happens to us? A life of conflict with no time for friends, so that when it's done, only our enemies leave roses? Something in our personalities, perhaps? Some animal urge to fight and struggle, making us what we are? We do what we have to. Others bury their heads between the swollen tits of indulgence and gratification. Piglets squirming beneath the sow for shelter, but there is no shelter. And the future is bearing down like an express train.
Yeah. I loved Watchmen. But, you know, I wonder, you know. I mean, look at, you know, I think about Ricky, and like I said, we can debate from now until the cows come home whether or not that the attacks on her were justified. Personally, I didn't agree with every political decision that she made, but I also respected her as an activist. I respected her as particularly as an author, because I thought her writings were incredible and extremely valuable even today. I would recommend her books to anyone. You know, but
knowing her a little bit, I agree with some of her insights. But again, Monica mentioned that we are a microcosm of the whole, but we don't see that in terms of our leadership. We say that. I remember when we were forming Gender Pact, that there were major concerns about some people wanted signers there, or people were debating on the fact about whether people could be there who didn't give any consideration about. And I raised that concern that they didn't give any consideration over people who had physical infirmities that kept them from being able to have the access to this type of event, which should be more inclusive. That people did not, we don't, people who walk around with canes or walk around with crutches or who don't see the way that we do. We don't make room for that in leadership. And there's a big problem with that. If we want people to see that we are, that organizations like Gender Pact or INTAC or what's that thing that Mara's leading now? NCTE. If we're going to see these types of organizations actually take a leadership role, then there's going to be more participation, not just from people of color. And when I say that, that doesn't mean that they have to be all black. There has to be some participation. We have to look at all areas of our society and our culture. There should be some sort of spiritual component. There should be some component for people who are blind, some people who are deaf. There should be some people who are concerned about us as we age. There is nothing about
I agree with you. In fact, when Monica and I were talking last week, one of the things I suggested to her was that when we have these hearings and we present ourselves, it shouldn't be, you know, all like war heroes and you know, these folks who are business leaders, you know, your Diego Sanchez's, your Diane Schroer's. I mean, it's great to have those folks to put out there as examples, but nevertheless, we don't need all business leaders and war heroes. We also need grocery clerks and cab drivers and you know, exactly, average everyday exactly. working folks.
Exactly. And that's what I mean. Ordinary working, you find ordinary working folks who are blind. You find ordinary people who get around with crutches or in wheelchairs.
Absolutely.
You need to find some of these people, and a lot of them got a lot more sense than some of the people who are at the helm now.
Oh, absolutely.
Some of them have just as much. which is frightening, but...
Yeah, and I respect Mara a lot. I've had her on the show a number of times. I respect her. I think she does good work. But at the same time, Mara is very good about bringing the message to straight folks. And I think what we really need most right now is some internal organizing where we need to create our own community, our own political force. And I think that's where we are failing most significantly, is we're not building that kind of force, like such as we see with the gay and lesbian community around marriage. We don't see that. We don't have that kind of a force of an effort. You know, I mean, there are some stray people here who try to, like, act as cheerleaders, people like me and Ethan St. Pierre and people who do media and stuff like that. But that's not the same thing, because I'm not a political leader. I don't want to be a political leader. I'm doing what I want to do right now. I'm talking to people. I'm asking the questions. I'm hopefully getting answers. And the people who are listening to this, hopefully, are going to have those ideas and go out and lead. That's not me. I'm not a leader. I've tried. I've been a leader. I've done that bit. It's not what I'm good at. What I'm good at is shooting my mouth off with a microphone in front of me. That's what I'm good at, you know?
Well,
and I don't want to be, you know, because I've had people who've said this, you know, Becky, you should organize. Well, you know, I did. Angela Brightfeather and I ran a group called Out for Dean Transgender, which later became Out for Democracy. We had a meeting with the Kerry campaign. I was the chair. She and I were co-chairs. I've done that bit. And, you know, the truth is there are other people who are far better qualified to do that kind of thing than I am. And so what we need is, I think we need people who are going to be willing to step up and say, yes, follow me. I'll lead. And that's where I think we run into trouble, because we don't get those people. And when we do get them, on the rare occasions, we get a Ricky Wilchins or somebody like that. We chop them down. You know,
well, we not only have to encourage leaders, but we also, like, you've said that through experience you found out what you can do and you've stuck to that, and that's a good thing. But there comes a point when the old guard is replaced. And what I'm seeing and friends of mine are seeing is that there is an incredible movement of youth who are determining that we don't fit in the boxes and that we need to define ourselves. And in the definition of continuum, which allows for many facets, they're creating community that people in who stood with me at GenderPAC didn't foresee, or we did not do as well as implementing it. I think that the hope for us is in the future with our kids. With some of the teens that are out there, some of the young adults.
I completely agree with you, but let me ask you a question. Since you were there at the beginning with GenderPAC, one of the criticisms that I remember from the 90s when GenderPAC was formed, and originally it was created, or at least it was perceived to be created anyway, as a transgender advocacy organization. And then Ricky said, well, we're going this gender rights route, which is much broader, and it involves, you know, all these other different things. And I know from talking to people, a lot of trans folks felt like, no, this is our organization. We need something that focuses on trans people, on transgender rights. We need something that is about and for and by us, not so general that we wash out the whole thrust of it. And I think that was led to a lot of the animosity towards GenderPAC and towards Ricky. And I'm wondering, since you were there at the beginning, what's your feeling about that? I mean, do you agree that GenderPAC took too broad of a scope to really be effective?
I, you know, we could debate that until the cows come home.
Mr. Mike pressed the wrong button there, I think.
That's okay.
Oh, dear.
I pressed a few buttons, too. A friend of mine is IMing me to bring on an interesting example. Here in Philadelphia, right? We had TDOR. I don't know whether it started here, but it started with an alumnus of the city. And anyway, about 3-4 years ago, the events were held at the community center, William Wick. And it was okay until 3 years ago. And then it was an afterthought. One of the people who's on staff there put together a quick display in a room with a few slides and a few candles, and that was it. It made me so angry, I cried. And so the next year, I said, not on my watch. And I consulted with a few of my friends, a lot of notable people in the area. There was Sudan Nabule, there was Eric Gorman, there was Candace at the center, and we all put together these ideas. And what wound up happening 2 years ago, it turned out to be a beautiful thing where we took not only the events of the people that died, but we separated into a multi-day event so that people could hear our issues and deal with them other than just the fact on that day that they did their trans stuff and they went home. Now, last year, when against my better judgment, I was asked to come back and to help facilitate this thing. And I brought a crew in with me, and there were all sorts of different problems with space for the events and what have you. Space wasn't necessarily available at the center right away. We had to make other plans. When we made other plans, we got sideswiped. There was a trans organization that just formed here in city, got the 501c3. They offered a space. There were things that went behind our backs that, yes. You know, and so on. But even though the event itself was there was a movement from people who were not us per se to move the event to the community center underneath the community center's control. What actually wound up happening was what we envisioned at the group that came together that I adjudicated. And I don't want to leave anybody out. There was also a lot of help from my friend Dawn Monroe, who's out there. This past year, and we wound up holding about 3-4 days of events, and for the first time in this city, there were Transgender Day of Remembrance events that were held not by trans organizations and not by trans people.
Right. Now, we should point out to folks who don't know that the city you're referring to is Philadelphia, right?
Yes.
Okay, so, just wanted to let folks know who are tuning in. Hey, Dion, we need to take a quick break, and can you stick around and do a little bit more with us?
Sure.
Okay, great. We're going to take a quick break, and you are listening to the Rebecca Juro Show. We are talking to Dion Stallworth, and we are going to have a quick song from Nomalee Brennett, and we'll be back.
Granny's in the front yard, crazy like a fox, with a house coat and a mismatched socks. She doesn't look like a hell of a lot, but she's still got a couple of things she knows, yeah. One time I'm walking down the street, she says, come over here, girl, and sit down at my knee. I'll tell you something somebody told me a long, long time ago. Oh, oh, if the seed falls from the tree, it's a tricky rhythm. It's a tricky rhythm there. It's was wrong, you know. 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and 1 and 2. Anyway, the story continues. Years later, I married that guy. He was an asshole, but still I had to try. I took the keys and left one night, cause I remember what Granny said. She's right, if the seed falls from the tree, try for fear of losing ground or losing my mind. If it's gone, then it was never mine. I remember this every time. If the seed falls from the tree, we'll let it alone. And if that seed, let me see your hands, never grows, well, then that seed was wrong. And if that seed falls, if that seed never grew. The Nazi was wrong. Give yourselves a hand. Yeah.
Yay! All right. Q1.fm and TransFM has the Rebecca Giro Show, or maybe in the Friendly Podcast. Who knows how you're listening to Becky, but we appreciate you doing that. Becky's guest, Dion Stallworth, will be back in just a moment. Hang on.
Back. This is the Rebecca Giro Show. We are talking to activist and one of the founding members of Gender Pact. Dion Stallworth is with us. And Dion, another thing that I wanted to ask you about, I have to admit, didn't know you were going to be on tonight, so kind of didn't do as much preparation for this interview as I would have liked, so I'll admit that. But what I wanted to ask you was, I think what we see a lot in our modern community, what I mean by that is I'm comparing it to like the way we were, I don't know, say 15 years ago or 14 years ago. I mean, I came out in 1997, and it seemed like in those days, we were a lot more, it was a lot more us against the world. And now what we see is, the human rights campaign in a lot of ways has co-opted certain parts of our advocacy. The National Transgender Advocacy Coalition, which was once our primary advocacy organization and was out there, more of an in the face, in the streets kind of organization. What we see now is we have the National Center for Transgender Equality, but it's only when we are directly attacked, when we have something that makes us so angry, that we can't help but go out in the field, like in 2007, when we went out to protest the Human Rights Campaign. What needs to happen next? Do we need to get out in the streets? Do we need to be more effective as political lobbyists? What do you see as the next step for us?
I see the next step as being the first step that I said at the beginning of this piece. We need to identify ourselves as being on a continuum. And once we've done that, we need to be comfortable with presenting that to other people, so other people won't be co-opting us. What you're speaking about, and this has a definitive impact on that, is assimilationist theory or reality, depending on what part of the rainbow you're in.
But don't we have to assimilate to a certain point in order to be accepted? We can't.
Excuse me?
Isn't part of the problem that we've always been considered an other? And that we need to be able to say, no, 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 we're not an other. We're just like you, only we're just a little bit different, i.e. the way the gay community has said, yeah, we're just like you, except we happen to sleep with people of the same sex. Yeah, we're just like you, except that the way we were born doesn't reflect how we live today.
Okay. Let me hip you to a piece of history, okay? I'm going to do this same history and what you just mentioned. Okay, back in the throngs of the history of the so-called gay movement, which included us at that particular time, because then we were still trying to figure ourselves out, even though it had been figured out for us since the beginning of time. Gays decided we were with the gays, and we were included with them, even though that may not necessarily be the totality of who we were, but history being what it was, that's where we were, i.e. Sylvia Rivera, Miss Major, a few other people. Okay. Mm-hmm. What happened was that the gays said, okay, we are not like you. This is who we sleep with. This is who we are. This is how we present ourselves. But you will not disrespect us. You will not keep us from coming to the table, yada, yada, yada. And we were all there. And we lost in the advent of the HIV/AIDS epidemic, we lost a lot of the leaders that we could have and would have had. Some of them were even mislabeled as gay men or lesbians. So we lost some of our trans men and some of our trans women and intersex activists who would have stood the ground for us. And somewhere in the 70s and 80s, the gays started saying, okay, we're just like you. They started going with their lobbies. They started saying, we're just like you. It's just that we don't sleep with the same people that you do. Now, that doesn't mean that we're going to let you disrespect us and that you need to let us at this table. And we bring money and some of the stuff that you want at the table. And then the politicians read back to you. They said, what about these transgender folks? Well, they're on outer fringes. They don't really count. Well, we can talk about them, but you got to do right by us. Okay. Now, this goes back to what happened with women. Back in the 40s and 50s, women were still like second or third class citizens in this country for the most part. The idea of, and still in some respects, they still are. Now, you find that women had just... for the most part, had just come back into the home after being in the factories, working, contributing to the household, yada, yada, yada. And some in the 60s and 70s, they started saying, back in the 40s and 50s, they were saying that, okay, our uteri and our ovaries are who we are. We have the babies, and that's part of who we are, but that's most of who we are, and that's okay. Now, somewhere in the 70s and 80s, with women, they decided, guess what? It takes, the 70s and 80s, they said that the ovaries and the uteri, we're not all of who we are. And we're humans, and we're much more than that. And somewhere in the 90s, that reversed again, and it's about whether or not you can have a baby. What I'm saying is, if you start thinking about who's included and who is not included, there's an old poem, they came for the Catholics, and I wasn't Catholic, so I didn't say anything.
They came for the Protestants, yada, yada, yada,
and then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak. Like I said, it all goes back to being a bloody human being. If you don't speak up as human beings first, if we don't classify ourselves as human beings in the gender movement, in the gender variant or the trans variant movement, whatever you want to call it, if we can't solidify our own humanity with ourselves, the gays and everyone else will give us up, and we're nowhere. And we aren't that different from gay people. We aren't that different from lesbians. We are them. They are us. And they need to understand that. They first need to understand that we're human beings first. Then we can both go and represent our own interests with the politicians and what have you. But until we in queer space start recognizing the basic humanity of each other, then divide and conquer has worked since the beginning of time. It'll still keep working.
Right. And we have actually one of our listeners, Ian, said, and the quote that this person said, I don't know if it's a man or a woman, said, "We are others and others are us. But as Dion is saying, until we speak up for our omnipresent selves, others will." And, you know, I totally agree with that. I think that, you know, we need to be able to speak out on our own behalf. And I think, you know, as we saw with Don Lemon and with so many others, when we entrust that to other people, or when other people even take it upon themselves to usurp that right from us and say, we will speak for you, a la the Human Rights Campaign and, you know, other similar organizations and spokespeople, it never is as good and as honest and as true and as relevant as when we speak for ourselves.
And that's why you and Ethan Pierre and about three or four other people who are out there right now do more for us than the Mara Kieslings and the Diego Sanchez's combined. Because the fact of the matter is that you're putting out there who we are as human beings, and you're saying it in our voice. So there are people like me who may not agree with everything that you say, but we support you in the recognition of our combined humanity.
I appreciate that. I just wish more people would, you know, if somebody has something, and I've said this on the show a number of times, if somebody disagrees with me on something that I say, I want them to call me up. Use our phone number. Call me out. Let's get into it. Let's debate the issue. I'd rather hear that. And there have been times when people have come on this show and say, you know what, Becky, you're wrong. And here's why you're wrong. And I won't always agree with them, but you know what? I'm always willing to hear them out. And I'm willing to have the debate, because it's having the debate and having the discussion. That's what this show is about. And that's what I try to be about. Because, you know, it's not about me being right all the time. I mean, you know, obviously I say what I believe, but, you know, I'm no omnipresent, great master of trans whatever. I'm just another voice out there.
No one is. And if we start expecting, I mean, our leaders, when they lead us, they have to recognize that they aren't either. And I think that that's where I think that some people were expecting that of Ricky. And I think that's what failed, because her definition of who we are and where we are was different than one person's, from another person's to another person's. And then came all that. Then came all the
But I would disagree with you on one small point there. And that would be that Ricky came to notoriety being that person. She was the person who would say those things that nobody else would say, who would call people out, who was that figurehead in those days. And then she kind of took more of a watered down kind of, you know, gender rights kind of thing. And I think people were disappointed because I even wrote about this at one point. I wanted that early Ricky. I wanted the one who said, no, we're not going to take no for an answer and you're wrong. And we're going to call you out and we're going to show up and we're going to protest and we're going to speak out. And then, you know, it seemed like, and I'm not saying that this is necessarily true, but it seemed like she became one of the activist elites. And as that happened, it's almost like her, you know, the Ricky that we grew up with, the Ricky that we came to, you know, appreciate for what she was willing to say. She was willing to say the things that nobody else was saying. And that person kind of evolved into something very different. And I think that there was a disappointment there.
Yeah, you saw as she grew older, her stances seem to soften somewhat.
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes, exactly. Okay. By the way, I want to mention, we have another comment from somebody who goes by Arab's Daughter. Says, as annoyed, angered, and hurt as we are, it has yet to be enough to accept nothing less than to sit at the head of the table, albeit political, educational, spiritual, and others, agreed Becky. And how much research or preparation do we need to speak on our own lived and life experiences? I would throw that what we need to not is not as preparation as we need honesty and willing to stand and just talk about this stuff and to say,
let me show you what my life is like. There's a great philosopher out there by the name of Bill Maher who said that the truth will set you free, but it also gets you fired. Okay. Yeah. When we say the truth, one of my favorite sayings is Nicholson's in A Few Good Men. You can't handle the truth. Most of the people who are in leadership positions to this day, when they see someone like me or you coming, they run, or what, they will work behind the scenes to subvert us. They may or may not mean to, but in the end, they do this because, as I said before, we, for some reason, they don't see us as humans. So when we speak to our experiences and how this includes, how they have not included us, or whatever agenda they happen to be promoting does not include us, they don't want us.
Yeah.
They don't want us.
I totally agree. You know, as long as I've got you on, Dion, I guess we're going to do a few more minutes because we started really late. So we're going to go a little bit late tonight. But one thing I wanted to ask you, since you are a Philadelphia activist, one story which is getting a lot of play in our community right now is the story about SEPTA, which is the public transportation line in Philadelphia, and the gendered passes, which has really become a major issue. Could you give us some sort of an update on that? Can we expect anything to change there? Because it seems like what's happening there is that they're leaving the determinant of gender in the hands of the bus driver or the subway conductor or it just seems like Philadelphia, the powers that be don't seem to consider this a very important issue.
Of course they don't, and it's still not an important issue because again, what you see again is the lack of male and female are the only two boxes that fit. Anything outside of that box is not human, therefore does not have the right to exist. Therefore, we don't have to support any sort of recognition of that same. There's another story earlier this week, I think, about some trans woman who spent a year in a woman's facility, and because she was abused by the guard and filed a complaint, they are now moving her after a year in a woman's facility, they're moving her to a male facility. And I went back, and I don't advise everybody to do this, but I went back and read the article and then went and read all of the comments after the article. At that particular time, there were 4 pages. And I'd be willing to bet you, dollars to donuts, and most every article and situation that this occurs where people comment, and I've seen it on Balerico after some of your articles, after some of Dr. Weiss's articles and other people's, about 85 to 90% of them, the first thing that they call us is it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is it. It is. It does not have a respect or an honoring of the human being that is attached to that particular situation. And as long as we allow that, it will continue.
Yeah, but you know, you can turn that around and say, but you know, we can only do so much, because let's be honest, we don't have very often the numbers. We don't have the money, which is one of the reasons why we're so impotent at the federal level. I mean, and I know from personal experience, there was a time when I was looking to move to Philadelphia, and I went to a temporary agency looking for work so that I could facilitate my move to Philadelphia. And I sent a resume. They loved my resume. And when I got to the place on Broad Street, quickly discovered, oh, we have nothing for you. The minute they realized I was transgender, and we should point out that Philadelphia is a city where there is a law that protects transgender people from discrimination, yet it didn't seem to play into anything.
This may not be the most politically correct thing to say at this particular point in time. But, I'm not going to say that comment, but I will say this, okay? You have to realize, just because there's a law, it doesn't mean that the things that the law stands for are not going to happen. I mean,
right. Oh, of course. Just because there's a law against speeding doesn't mean that people aren't going to speed.
Are real oldies, but guess what? They occur every bloody day.
Right. I'm just saying is you know, it just seems like there's the culture hasn't quite caught up. Yes, they've got a law, but it doesn't seem to be enforced in any credible way. You know, and I say somebody who's confronted that law directly, and you know, you look for work in Philadelphia, and there's just nothing for you.
Well, see, that's the other end of the other end of the stick. I mean, just because the law exists in that particular respect, it doesn't mean that it actually is explicit enough to continue. This is one of the reasons why that there needs to be some overall federal legislation to put into law non-discrimination employment act that would protect us not only when we go to get a job, but that we can keep our job, that we don't have to spend our time fighting so damn much to hold on to a job that it tires us out spiritually, physically, and financially, so that we get tired and we quit. Now, mm-hmm. but the thing about it is that, as I said, I know people who are involved in the Rage Project, and I admire their tenacity. I admire what they stand for. But is this the best use of our activism? Is this the best use of our time? If you can't even get yourself, if you have you everything in this in the world that in which we live right now, well, not everything, but most of the things that directly affect our survival come from employment. Now, if you can get a job, first off, if you get one, say that you haven't come into be comfortable with your own skin, your own identity yet, and you're a young trans woman who's still projecting a male identity, but you have this job, say maybe about 2-3 years, and then all of a sudden you decide to transition. There's nothing in that law that's going to keep them from firing you, sweetheart. There's nothing in the law that exists now that's going to support your right to work, and they can fire you because of it.
Well, yeah, but, because of the right to work laws.
Yeah, but if we in this ground level start to push for something that could protect us in that way to support our human right to exist and to recognize what that is, and we start they need to start educating the people in City Hall, they start the state government and so on. Babette Josephs have been really good in that respect, and a few others, but we need more. We need to see that in the townships, in the cities, minor and major, and everywhere. And once we start to see that people have an understanding of this, then people will understand how ridiculous this is. That you need a bus pass to say male or female. It's yeah. I mean, there are many people who look androgynous, and they don't have any of the gender issues that we've had to go through, but they go through, they get their passes, yada, 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 another day. But yeah. Then there's some people who have morphological, gender appearances that are contrary to that, and they get hassled the same way. And so it's ineffective. I mean, to a certain extent, I understand why there is a movement to get rid of this, and I am all for it. However, I think that there's larger fish to fry. I mean, maybe this is the beginning of them finding out what that human is. I could be this could be the way that comes about. I think that there are bigger issues, but I still go back to what I said at the beginning. Until we can define ourselves as human beings, not just in our eyes, but in the eyes of queer space, then we'll be able to do it outside of that, and then people will begin to respect us as human beings and see that our rights are worth that. Other people will join in the fight, and they will be so outraged that they will not allow these types of things to happen.
Mm. Okay, well, I'm just going to hit you up with one more question, because we're running a little late here because we started late, but I'm going to wrap up right after this. But so we know we have to, as you say, we have to get people and the non-trans folks to accept us as fellow humans. But let's take it to the political for a moment, because in order to get people to accept us as human, I think it's fair to argue that, you know, if you're somebody who says, well, you know, this person over here, this straight non-trans person, or even this gay non-trans person over here, you know, if they get fired because of who they are, they have redress to the law, but you don't. And, you know, people are still arguing that, you know, you're a danger if you use the same bathroom as they do. You know, don't we have to go and take advantage and use the political component? Don't we have to become more active and more effective politically? I mean, you know, yes, of course, the human issue thing, but aren't the two things really connected? It's like, how can we expect people to see us as equals if the law does not define us as equals?
Of course, this is exactly what I said about the civil rights struggle in the 60s, and even the so-called gay rights movement, which started long before Stonewall, if you want to know the truth of it. But the idea is that Milk didn't win his seat because it entirely the gay vote. And if he did win it all because of the gay vote the first time, he sure as hell didn't win it when he got for reelection. What he did is he pulled from areas that weren't gay. And why did he do that? And how could he do that? Because he made people see him more than a one issue person. We have to be about what we are about totally. Sure, I'm intersex and have a trans existence, but that's not all of who I am. I'm also a black woman. I'm also the daughter of a police officer. I also have three kids. Two of them are mine, and one of them adopted. My kids don't talk to me, but except for the one who just had my grandson, and that's the adopted one. But that's another story. But this is what I'm saying. I mean, and that's just the stuff that I'm listing. We need it's all connected, but we need to come together. We need to present it to ourselves, accept that for ourselves, and then we present it to the queer people, get them on board, and not this for lack of a better term, stupid shit that Don Lemon came out with the other day and all of the rest of that crap. We have to, I mean, people really going to have to understand what it means to be us. Yeah. They're going to have to understand that, and they're going to have to see it.
I totally agree with you, Dion. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. This is really a great conversation, and I hope you'll call in again and talk to us again, because this was a lot of fun, and it's really terrific to talk to somebody with the level of experience. And, you know, one of our community's, premier activists who's been around a hell of a lot longer than I have, that's for sure. And, you know, really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us tonight.
Oh, thanks. It was fun. It was a little scary for me, I got to admit. But
Well, we're not that scary, are we? Come on.
Oh, it's not you. It's just the idea of, you know, I know this is recorded, so some of this stuff I'm not going to be able to take back, which is why I held back that earlier comment. I may say that off the air, but I'm not going to put it out there.
We're very good at editing things, Dion.
Yes, we are. And we should remind people that the show will repeat just a few minutes after we're done here. So if you missed the beginning, you can catch the beginning right after this. You wait a few minutes and we'll be back on. And we are going to wrap this sucker up. Thank you to Dion Stallworth for hanging out with us. Thank you to you, Mr. Mike. And thank you to you for supporting this media, for tuning in, for putting up with all our technical issues. And we'll catch you next week. Have a good night, everybody.
show the people.